welcome to the Molloy Program on a Tuesday evening. I'm glad you're here. Stick around for a while. We have one of our very, 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 very infrequent guests coming up at the top of the next hour. Former governor of Alabama, Doug. okay, let me go home. Wait a minute, I am home. Former Democratic governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman, who, in the opinion of a lot of people, myself included, was railroaded into a lengthy prison term. Another one of Karl Rove's many actions to destabilize the country and guarantee a so-called permanent Republican majority in power. Hey, I got it out. So we will be talking to Don Siegelman coming up at the top of the next hour. Stick around for that, okay? Molloy's Uncensored Mailbag. The new one is now posted at MikeMolloy.com for you wonderful, gracious, happy, pleasing podcast subscribers, right? And as usual, it's pretty much a doozy. So go to MikeMolloy.com and go into the podcast member section, and the new video is up thanks to our technical director, Ben Birch. What else we got? Any other business? I don't think so. No, nothing here to report to you. Nothing at all. So let's call it a night and go home. No, we can't do that. UCLA has their graduation ceremonies coming up, I think, in about, this weekend, isn't it? June 13th. Yeah, I think it's this weekend, June 13th. And a student there can, according to, this is just bizarre, so bizarre. A student there can thank his personal savior Jesus Christ, in a personal statement to be read during graduation ceremonies, even though an administrator at the school initially barred use of the Christian reference. The university made that announcement today. Senior campus counsel L. Amy Blum, in a letter dated today, said the university supports, quote, the First Amendment and in no way intended to impinge upon any student's rights, end quote. Students, you see, in the molecular cell and developmental biology department were asked to submit short statements that would be read as they cross the stage to receive their degrees. Student Christina Popa's statement read in part, quote, I want to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, end quote. The student affairs advisor for that department, molecular cell and developmental biology, the student affairs advisor objected to the Jesus reference and asked her to substitute it with, I want to thank God instead. When Ms. Popa protested, the administrator told her the only other option would be to forego any statement at all. Well, no, that's not how it works. You know, she can, if she wants to cross the stage to receive her diploma in molecular biology, and the university is reading statements written by the students, her statement can say, I want to thank my Lord and Savior chair for helping me through the course, or I want to thank my Lord and Savior apple tree, or I want to thank my Lord and Savior molecular biology boy. What the hell does university care? You see, this is where the crazy part really gets to me. No, I know a lot of people say, but Molloy, you're an atheist. What do you mean the crazy part? You'd rather they didn't say anything. Well, that's true. I would rather not see people going into molecular biology and molecular cell and developmental biology referencing a cloud being. But if the student wants to do that, and it is, last time I checked, UCLA was a publicly funded university, which means they can't discriminate, can they? Even against people who want to thank their Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. The department said it was concerned the university could be seen as endorsing a specific religion. Oh, stop. The student behind Miss Popa could say, I want to thank my Lord and Savior, the Prophet Muhammad. And the next one could say, I am still waiting for my Lord and Savior to come because I'm a Jew. And the next one could say, I want to thank all the deities in the firmament who have helped me get through school. What the hell difference does it make, right? It's madness. It really is madness. This is why, you know, the main reason I think, if someone, I mean, does this young lady think that her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ will be listening and watching the ceremonies today, on the 13th? Or does she think her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ's dad, God, will be watching the ceremonies so that her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ's dad, God, can call Jesus up on whatever they use in heaven and say, hey, guess what? What's her name? Mentioned your name today when she walked across the stage to get her diploma in molecular cell development. And what will her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ say? Cool! Really? All right. I mean, the whole thing is madness, isn't it? I mean, isn't it just sloppy madness? I guess I was brought up in a time when I used to be religious. Well, not religious, but when I used to believe that if I did anything wrong, God would devour me, rip my head off, and throw me into a Hieronymus Bosch painting or something. When I used to believe religious mythology and superstition, I also believed, as did most of the adults that I came in contact with, that one's personal belief system ought to be private and personal and, you know, and do what this young lady's Lord and Savior Jesus Christ told people to do, and that is, when you want to pray to my Father, go into the closet, whatever a closet was 2,000 years ago, go into a closet, shut the door, and have your chat. But that's all gone now. Displays of public piety are, and thanking cloud beings are just absolutely necessary, I guess. I mean, again, I have no problem with an individual. I mean, in the big picture of things, of course, I have problem with it, but that's just my own bias. You know, if someone does want to offer up thanks to, I don't know, a piece of chalk for helping her get through molecular biology class, good, go ahead, you know, whatever. In this instance, yes, I'm coming down on the side of the student and not the university. The arrogance of UCLA to tell their graduating seniors, go ahead and write a statement that will be read as you cross the stage. Oops, you can't write this one because you reference a specific deity. And if you reference this specific deity, then our university will get a reputation as having endorsed that specific. Oh, God. But you see, UCLA, that was not the case at all. You told the students to write something that they wanted read as they crossed the stage to get their diploma. Of course, it's the university system in California that also allows torture boy John Yoo to continue to be a tenured professor at the University of California, Berkeley. So, go figure, right? Now, if they're interested in slamming down on somebody's free speech, why not go after John Yoo, whose policies resulted in the deaths of thousands of Americans and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis? This young woman who's a student and wants to thank her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ is certainly not involved in Megadeth. What was that, a bolt from heaven? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by. Your dreams, the one they picked, the one.
So, radio to Mike Malloy.
The hour. Remember, coming up right after the break at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, another American citizen whose life and career and very existence was a threat, apparently, to Karl Rove's permanent majority, and Rove and a bunch of people decided to end Don Siegelman. But it hasn't worked out that way, at least not yet. And he'll be joining us, so stick around for that. I blogged about this today, but I'm trying to figure out what it is about Lieberman and Graham that makes them say the release of any photos and any remaining videos. Remember, the CIA was accused of destroying, was it 80, 90, 100, 30, 12, 16, 43, 106 videos. No one will ever know, of course. Videos of torture. Moments in torture. If they needed a title, I guess that would be sufficient. Videos taken from our various and sundry torture rooms around the world. And it's my understanding those torture videos were then looked at and lips were licked and hands shook and hair was smoothed back from the people watching. And I believe that the people watching these videos included the upper reaches, and that is the proper term, of the Bush crime family. There are some videos left, apparently, and a whole slew of photographs taken by God only knows whom. And you know the story. The ACLU has sued to have those released. And the Obama administration, at first agreeing to release them, now has said no. And now the Republicans are jumping in here because some Democrats in Congress are insisting, or Democrats in the House, I should say, are insisting that these remaining pieces of evidence, visual evidence, should be released. So, Lieberman, Holy Joe, and this crazed senator from South Carolina over here, Lindsey Graham. You know, it was Lindsey Graham who, during the impeachment of Bill Clinton, because Bill Clinton lied about oral sex with his girlfriend, it was Lindsey Graham who screamed rule of law, like something out of a Todd, what was that movie, Freaks, Todd Browning, something out of a Todd Browning film. And that's the way the House managers impressed me all those years ago. Was it 10 years ago when they tried to, after impeaching Clinton, they tried to get him convicted in the Senate. And Lindsey Graham was one of the House managers. And as they marched across the Capitol Rotunda from the House side to the Senate side, I believe Lindsey Graham was, he was in the House then, I think. And it doesn't really matter in the context of the story. He was one of the people who was chanting, rule of law, one of us, one of us. If you've never seen Freaks, you should download it or rent it or something. Todd Browning's movie is made in the early 30s. One of the scariest movies ever made, as far as I'm concerned. And anyway, I digress. So Joe Lieberman and Lindsey Graham are threatening to use any means possible, including a filibuster, to block the U.S. House of Representatives from overturning their amendment that blocks the release of detainee interrogation photos. There is a move now to get this stuff released. I mentioned the other night an essay in the June 19th issue of The Nation magazine about how torture has utterly and absolutely, Jonathan Schell's essay, has absolutely and utterly gutted whatever moral center this country had. And the only way to reestablish that moral center is to get this out, to get it out, confront it, because if we do not, then this becomes part of American history, and actions subsequent to our use of torture rooms become not unlike the torture that we have been engaged in under the Bush crime family. It's a very dicey issue. This is that we're on such shaky ground here, and Jonathan Schell makes a perfect case for it. If the essay weren't quite as long, I would be inclined to share it with you. And by reading the whole thing, I still may. We're really, as a country, we're on spooky ground here. The firmament is shaking underneath our feet. The solid firmament. Haha. And, Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman are insistent they will shut down the government unless the House passes, some sort of a law, hiding forever the evidence of the atrocities that we as a nation committed, allowed to be committed. I know. The argument is we didn't know anything about it. Well, okay, fair enough. Then what we should do is to impanel a Truth and Reconciliation Commission that rips the cover off of all this stuff and puts it out there for us to see. Most of the world knows what went on. So, you know, I raise the question, who does Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman, who are they trying to protect? And I think the answer is clear. They're trying to protect themselves and the Republican Party from the revelations that the evidence of what they did, what the Bush crime family did, and what those repercussions are going to be for a long time. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Back to Lieberman and Graham. I don't get either one of these guys, especially not Lieberman. They say they insist that the release of these torture pictures is comparable to a death sentence for some U.S. operatives who are working in hostile countries. The pictures are a virtual death sentence. What about the policies instituted by Republicans? What about the policies of the Bush crime family? You know, I mean, is there not someone who can explain that to both these clowns? That the only people who are to be kept in the dark about all this are the poor, stupid, hapless, brain-dead, right-wing talk radio fried Americans? Is there anyone else on earth except us who is not fully aware of what we did, how we did it, to whom we did it, the circumstances under which we did it, and how goddamn foul and belligerent and hateful and ugly it was? No, there isn't. Lieberman and Graham said they were going to attach their ban on releasing these photos to every piece of legislation that is passed in the Senate. Until the House also passes a ban. What they want is a 3-year ban on Freedom of Information Act releases of the pictures unless they get notified. 3-year ban. Let's see, what's up in 3 years? Oh, it's election time. They also issued a statement. This is the statement from Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman. We will employ... This is a quote. We will employ all the legislative means available to us, including opposing the supplemental war spending bill and attaching this amendment, which was unanimously adopted by the Senate, to every piece of legislation the Senate considers. To be sure, the president has the authority he needs not to release these photos and any others that would jeopardize the safety and security of our troops. Statement goes on. The release of the photos will serve as propaganda and a recruiting tool for terrorists who seek to attack American citizens at home and abroad. Let me digress. They will serve as propaganda and recruiting tool for terrorists. Really? Photos? What about the actual torture? What about sweeping up thousands of people for no reason whatsoever and dividing them amongst the various torture camps in our global gulag that includes compliant governments who will do our torture for? I mean, are these people crazy that a handful of photographs is going to... Wow. They go on. This is Lieberman, Lindsey Graham's statement. We should strive to have as open a government as possible. But the behavior depicted in the photos has been, excuse me, prohibited and is being investigated. Really? By whom? The photos do not depict anything that is not already known. Well, if that's the case, boys, then why not release them? You lying, cowardly sons of bitches, why not? They go on. Transparency, and in this case, needless transparency, should not be paid for with the lives of American citizens, let alone the lives of our men and women in uniform fighting on our behalf in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. Boys, there is not a soldier in Iraq or Afghanistan that is fighting on our behalf. You lying bastards. They are there for political reasons. They are not there to defend what? Freedom? Where? Here? There? Both of you are just absolutely insane. The statement goes on. Let it clearly be understood that without this legislation, the photos in question are likely to be released. Such a release would be tantamount to a death sentence to some who are serving our nation in the most dangerous and difficult spots like Iraq and Afghanistan. It is this certain knowledge of these consequences of having the photos released that will cause us to vote against the supplemental and continue our push to turn our important amendment into law, end quote. I wish that the Democrats in the House would continue to threaten or to attempt to release these photos, because it means that the supplemental, that this $96 billion that Barack Obama wants to expand the war in Afghanistan will stall. There will not be the funding, you see, and it will be Republicans, and Lieberman is a Republican, who are stopping the funding of the death and destruction and bombing and napalming and white phosphorusing and murder of hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of innocent civilians who happen to get in the way of tracking down whom? Who are we tracking down? Al-Qaeda operatives? The number one man in Iraq? The number one man in where? The number two man? Oh, we got the number two man several times. The number three man? Who are we looking for? The FBI doesn't even include Osama bin Laden on its 10 most wanted list. The FBI has nothing out for Barack Obama. Osama bin Laden. Jesus, it's, I get victim of my own tongue-tiedness. There is not even a warrant for Osama bin Laden. Who is it we are going after? What are we trying to track down? What? So Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman are going to make sure that the supplemental, the $100 billion supplemental, not included in the defense so-called budget. What is the defense budget this fiscal year? Is it $750 billion? And here's another paltry, stinking $100 billion that the boys are going to block from being used to fund the wars. Well, I think that's a grand idea. While I think Lieberman and Graham are both jackasses, the unintended consequence of their power play here and their attempt to shield the American public from what the Republican Party has committed, the unintended consequence will be no money for war. Well, okay, if this is how it has to be done, so be it, right? But of course, you and I both know that this is grandstanding, lying, bull hockey, horse feathers, nonsense. Lieberman and Lindsey Graham would no more stand in the way of funding for war and death and destruction in the Middle East and Southwest Asia than they would stand in the way of death ray handling Martians who land near the reflecting pool in D.C. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? And now it's not just these two half-assed Republicans. Leon Panetta, remember him? Bill Clinton's chief counsel, wasn't he, during the Clinton years? Our military affairs correspondent sends in a note along with the article. She says, isn't this convenient? Commit war crimes and then say we can't disclose the specifics of those crimes because it would help the bad guys and hurt the troops. Sharon adds, if I had a dollar for every time I heard that. She says, hey, Leon, what harms our national security isn't the evidence of the war crimes we committed. It is the war crimes themselves. By torturing Muslims, we helped al-Qaeda. By invading Iraq, we helped al-Qaeda. Trying to cover up our crimes helps al-Qaeda. It shows that we are so arrogant, we can't hold ourselves accountable or admit that we did wrong. When the Bush administration implemented their torture program, they cared not a whit for the safety of our soldiers or the American people. But now, we're supposed to keep the lid on these crimes to protect our troops and civilians. Major General John Batiste said of releasing the previous set of torture-related memos, quote, we need to own this, end quote. We need to find out what happened and who created and supported the torture policy and program. Sharon, P.S., it didn't take long for Leon Panetta to be brainwashed, did it? And what she's referring to is Leon Panetta told a federal judge yesterday that releasing documents about the CIA's terror interrogations would gravely damage national security. Sounds exactly like what the Bush crime family would say, right? Panetta sent a 24-page letter to New York federal judge Alvin Hellerstein arguing that release of agency cables describing torture used on al-Qaeda suspects would tell the enemy far too much about U.S. counterterrorism work? No, it's not that. It's torture.
Only with Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. A couple emails about this torture stuff that's just not going to go away. It really is not. The attempt to bury this is an attempt to... The analogy, I think, would be to have a huge sucking cancer deep inside someone's body, and a cure is available. And the cure would be, you know, extreme radiation and surgery. Okay, I'm just making this up, okay? But a quack doctor comes on the scene and says, no, you don't need to do that. Here, let's do this. Let's put these bandages over it and it'll go away. Pretend like it's not there. Andre writes, I get the feeling that if the torture photos and video were revealed and subsequent hearings on torture and the Bush administration, the Republican Party will be over, finished. They would be known as a rogue organization throughout America, and people would be leaving in droves. And the only way they might attempt to justify it to themselves and save it, the Republicans, is to go full-on terrorist on America. Yeah, I wonder. It's from Andre. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, writes, regarding the Graham Lieberman insistence, Michael writes, it's quite simple. Almost from the start, the CIA adopted the tactics and methods of its totalitarian adversaries as the only means of combating an ideology. So almost immediately, the CIA started defending their own ideology rather than a nation, and that meant they could discard any concerns about means not justifying the ends. Their methods, of course, became totalitarian, but that's not the reputation that the United States has consistently promoted for itself. And the great ultimate sin amongst the D.C. villagers is to admit a mistake, letting the curtain drop on what the United States has actually become. It doesn't matter if the United States dropped trow and deposited a giant blank in the world's punch bowl. We're not allowed to actually admit it. After all, if torture has always been known to be only good for extracting false confessions and forcing the recantation of beliefs, which are, by the way, both very important defenses of ideology in totalitarian nations, then why has the CIA spent 60 years refining and perfecting psychological terror and torture techniques from Project Artichoke all the way up to today's reverse engineering of SEER programs, when it claims it's just trying to get accurate intelligence? Maybe the truth is that the CIA and the United States, in deciding to use totalitarian methods to fight totalitarianism, has become what it once opposed. And as we all know, Hitler never sent Jews to the gas chambers, and Stalin never starved millions and put his opponents to death, and the United States has never, ever tortured people. Michael. Yeah. Who was it that wrote, it's your favorite philosopher, Kathy, be careful when you peer into the abyss, because the abyss will begin to peer into you. Nietzsche? Sure it was. Who? Walt Disney?
No, actually, Hop on Pop, Dr. Seuss. No, I like Immanuel Kant. He's my favorite philosopher. The imperative of respect. Memorize it.
The imperative of respect? I'm sorry, I didn't take those kinds of courses. I just didn't. I have huge gaping holes, wide enough you can drive a Walmart truck through where it concerns philosophical concepts. This was posted at bartcop.com, one of the most critical and important websites out there, bartcop.com. Here's what it says. Remember, science flies you to the moon. Religion flies you into buildings. I love Bart Kopp. Have you been to his website lately, bartcop.com? For God's sake, go, will you, please? We, usually by the time the program's over, Kathy's exhausted, but I usually stay here in the studio for at least a half an hour. And, handling emails or whatever, and I always end the day with a glass of wine and a visit to bartcop.com to see what he has up on any given day. It's an amazing place. You ought to check it out. Oh, the worst that any Republican could imagine has happened. Under heavy guard, a Guantanamo Bay detainee walked into a civilian U.S. courtroom in New York for the first time today. Oh, my God. Ahmed Gailani, a Tanzanian accused in two American embassy bombings a decade ago, pleaded not guilty. In a brief but historic federal court hearing that transported him from open-ended military detention for the rest of his life to the civilian criminal justice system in the United States. President Obama had said that keeping Galani from coming to the United States, quote, would prevent his trial and conviction, end quote. But House Republican leader John Boehner of Ohio said today's move is, quote, a first step in the Democrats' plan to import terrorists into America, end quote. The first step in the Democrats' plan to import terrorists into America. The first step in the Democrats' plan to import terrorists into America. We'll have more on that a little bit later in the program tonight. Coming up after the break, stick around. Former Governor Don Siegelman will join us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We have not heard from former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, so we shall leave the lines open. If he does want to call in, I don't know why he would miss the appointment, but that sort of thing happens in talk radio. Maybe he got involved in something serious. The number here is 877-996-2556. If you would like to join in the conversation, 877-996-2556. Back to this story that was filed by the Associated Press tonight regarding the Guantanamo Bay detainee, Ahmed Gailani, a Tanzanian accused in two American embassy bombings 10 years ago. He was brought from our torture facility at Guantanamo, brought into an American courtroom where he was read his rights, the charges. He was asked if he wanted to hear the charges against him, and he declined. I believe he declined. I think that's what this means. And he has been placed in detention, obviously, waiting for the trial to begin. He is accused of being a bomb maker, a document forger, an aide to Osama bin Laden, and he was brought to this country to await trial in connection with Al-Qaeda bombings that killed 224 people, including 12 Americans. This is at the U.S. embassies in Tanzania and Kenya back in 1998. Now, you remember the U.S. response to that, President Bill Clinton unleashed missile hell against the suspected headquarters of Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. And, of course, the Republicans immediately accused Bill Clinton of expression was popular back then, wag the dog, that this attack, this missile attack that slammed into Afghanistan was nothing more than a diversion to get people not to pay attention to the earth-shattering, constitution-breaking global disaster of Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. Oh, my God! But that's what Gailani is accused of doing, being one of the people involved in those bombings of the U.S. embassies in Tanzania and Kenya. U.S. Marshals, according to the AP, took custody of Galiani from his military jailers. And I don't know if that means in Guantanamo or if they brought him to Miami or something. Who knows? But U.S. Marshals took custody of him, transferred him to a federal lockup in Lower Manhattan. Oh my God! Oh, my God! It's the same lockup that currently holds Bernard Madoff. I bet they would, if they get together, have an interesting conversation. It once held John Gotti Jr., and also this lockup held blind terror leader Sheikh Omar Abdelrahman, the man who was accused and convicted and sentenced of being the first World Trade Center bomber. Do you remember that? 10 deputy marshals were in the courtroom along with Galiani, including two who stood behind him. Now, obviously, this trial is going to be an important test of Obama's plan to close Guantanamo within 7 months now and bring some of these suspects to the United States to stand trial. Attorney General Eric Holder said, quote, the Justice Department has a long history of securely detaining and successfully prosecuting terror suspects through the criminal justice system, and we will bring that experience to bear in seeking justice in this case. Well, I'm sure they will. I just like John Bonerhead's statement today. Well, it's the first step in the Democrats' plan to import terrorists into America. Isn't that nice? Isn't Boner the kind of Republican that this country needs? The kind of politician? What a filthy statement. What a son of a bitch Boner really is. What a useless piece of human waste he really is. And he's a senator. He's from Ohio. He is a representative and he's the House Republican leader. He's the one who had to hand over the gavel to Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. Now there's also going to be some political challenges to, Galiani's trial. According to the AP, congressional Republicans have repeatedly contended that transferring terror suspects to U.S. soil will threaten public safety. Oh, because you know all these suspects are 12 foot tall. They're the worst of the worst. They eat babies for breakfast. They eat women for lunch and they eat men for supper. Oh, they're awful. They are just so powerful. We can't handle them. We can do nothing except have 10 or 20 people hold them down and then torture them. Ah! Oh, my God. And the Republicans have been so good in their little fear and loathing campaign that this turns out to be one of the issues that seem to be falling the Republicans' way. Polls suggest that most Americans want to keep the Cuba-based prison operating. Oh, don't bring them here. Oh, they'll eat me. Oh, they'll break out of jail and throw nuclear bombs all over. Oh, I'm so scared. I'm so scared. Oh, save me, Rush. Save me, Mr. Boner. Save me, somebody. The terrorists are coming. The terrorists are coming. How did we get this way? I'll tell you how we got this way. It's the same way that America started hating Jews back in the 30s when the Nazis were rounding them up and deciding to put them into death camps. And that was because there was a guy named Father Coughlin who got on the airwaves on NBC and explained to people that the Jews were demons from hell and needed to be stopped. I mean, after all, he was a Catholic priest, and Pope Pius the 10th, 12th. Was supporting the extermination of all the Jews because, you know, the Jews killed Jesus. So, you know, turnabout's fair play, right? That's why Americans are so eat up with fear over people who have been accused of supporting terrorism, whether it was 10 years ago or 5 years ago or last week or next month or. But you see, we are so cowardly. We are so afraid that we can't trust our own security apparatus to maintain these people until they are brought to trial, and we can't trust our own criminal justice system to either convict them or find them innocent. Man. Man, oh man, oh man, oh man. Of course, if this man can be handled with no incidents in New York or wherever he winds up, then the Republican argument may fall flat on its flaccid ass, right? And maybe the cowardly Democrats in Congress will rethink their refusal to fund the closing of Guantanamo. Remember, it's not just Republicans who are doing this, right? It is the, what Bart Kopp calls the pink tutu Democrats, which is just about 90% of these useless members of Congress. You know that as well as I do. And just so you know, after that bombing in 1998, the U.S. embassies in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, this guy, Gailani, worked his way up the Al-Qaeda ranks. That's according to military prosecutors. Who knows? He was categorized as a high-value detainee by U.S. authorities after he was captured in Pakistan in 2004. And he was transferred to the detention center at Guantanamo 2 years later. Now, you can only imagine what happened to him in those 2 years that he was in custody somewhere in Afghanistan or Pakistan. You can just imagine what happened to him there, right? The this decision to bring him to New York and put him on trial is also revives a long dormant case charging bin Laden and other top Al-Qaeda leaders with plotting those embassy attacks. And that led Bill Clinton to launch those cruise missiles on camps in Afghanistan. Aren't you tired of this? Oh, by the way, four other men have been tried and convicted in the New York courthouse for their roles in the embassy attacks. All were sentenced to life in prison. No, they're not wandering around eating good Christian children in the suburbs of Chicago. No, they're really locked up. They really are. They're locked up. They're in prison where they will be for the rest of their lives.
As the last wave uncovers the newfangled way. But you need to the one that the heathens, and you sometimes rapidly feel, and your wise men don't know how it feels to be thick as a brick.
It's Mike Malloy. Baby, I've been drooling. All of you down, baby, I've been misusing. Way, way down inside, I wanna give you my love. I'm gonna give you every inch of my love. I'm gonna give you my love.
It's 21 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls. Kelly is calling from Nauvoo, Illinois. Is that right? Nauvoo?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Welcome to the program, Kelly.
Nice talking to you, Mike. The thing I wanted to talk about was how Guantanamo makes us look so bad in the eyes of the world, because at least the North Koreans gave those two young ladies a trial, even if it was a sham trial.
I guess what you're saying is the two women who worked for the internet TV, the thing is Al Gore's internet TV network, they weren't tortured. Is that right? I guess he got cut off. Okay, I think that's what Kelly was trying to say. Brantley is calling from New Mexico.
Yes, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, man, I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a while.
Okay.
I'm a commercial driver right now, and I drive along our border with Mexico. My route, I deliver groceries. Long story short, I'm bilingual. I speak Spanish as well as English.
Uh-huh.
And what I wanted to talk to you about is, A, this thing that I guess will never end, Mike, and that I hear it all the time. Someone will say, this far out from the event, well, since 9/11, and I guess that's never going to end. I guess I'll just accept that. But this is my whole point. Our Border Patrol, and now with the addition of Homeland Security, has grown so immensely. And I am stopped regularly.
Mm-hmm.
not on the border, Mike, but many as 120 the international border. And I'm asked the following question. In the beginning, about 2 years ago, it was real simple. It was, are you a U.S. citizen?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that is, that makes me indignant enough to be a U.S. citizen, you know, 60 miles outside of my own country.
Right.
But now, when I roll through, in addition to all the numerous cameras and electronic devices that detect large numbers of bills and this, that, and the other, I'm subjected to questions such as, where are you coming from? Where are you going? Where are you what are you hauling?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you, where did you stay there? And it is so frustrating. On the one hand, I understand a lot of these communities that are close to these stations and far outposts like Marfa, Texas, Columbus, New Mexico. All of these employees that our tax dollars put there, they really do an amazing thing for the local grocery stores, the restaurants, the gas stations, and all that stuff. It's created a tax base there. But me, as a citizen, I just find issue. I'm not a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not transporting illegals or drugs or guns or anything. And I don't care if you just busted four people. You can't treat me as if I'm another one. And I haven't studied my Fourth Amendment rights and whether it's even legal for them to be asking these questions. I have a feeling that it may not be. And the reason I say that is I will give our Border Patrol one, I'll give them props here. They offer, as a government agency, unfettered access, unprecedented access to people in supervisory positions.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've had to call because of a few, employees that were, well, I'm just going to put it plainly, Gestapo.
Right.
Straight Gestapo. And I've actually received calls back from my complaint from high up officials in department apologizing for the behavior of the officer and assuring me that further training will ensue. But still, it doesn't get past the point that you know, I feel like from now on, what happened in September is going to continue to erode my freedom slightly. And I know people who it doesn't bother, but, you know, Mike, I don't feel scared. I don't know if I'm naive or stupid, but I don't wake up in the morning and worry about whether or not I'm going to be attacked. I do wake up in the morning and worry about how much more my corporate bank is going to find a way to get to in my account. I worry about how much more the cell phone company that I've chosen to use, which is a large multi-billion dollar corporation, is going to be able to figure out how to get from me. But I don't worry about being attacked. And, you know, one more thing on this. A lot of it has to do with drugs, my friend. And I'll tell you what. One thing I know, I don't smoke weed, don't do drugs. I have before, but I don't now. And one thing I know is that I have had things stolen from me in the last 2 years at my home that I know were used to purchase mm-hmm. drugs because they're illegal. And I swear, it would make my life easier just trying to make a living. If all of a sudden we absolve the Border Patrol agent the responsibility of even having to worry if I was carrying this stuff.
Well, I hear you, Brantley, and I've got a break here, but what you say makes perfect sense. You haven't said anything that I disagree with. Things did change on September 11, 2001, where it concerns freedom of movement. Think about what you have to go through when you go through a damn airport check-in line. But I hear you, pal, loud and clear. Thanks, Brantley. Drive safely, okay?
For every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, cause I am a patriot.
25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Mark is calling from San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike, you're fabulous, buddy.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, let me just start off by saying I'm not scared of Al-Qaeda. I'm scared of the Republican Party.
Yeah, for real.
Because the Republican Party delivered America on a silver platter to Al-Qaeda. They destroyed our military, our economy. They outed Valerie Plame.
Mm-hmm.
They perverted our voting system. They've done everything to this country Al-Qaeda could dream of doing. And it's time we called them out on it.
Yeah, isn't it astonishing? They also destroyed our financial system. Not that they needed or the financial system needed too much help, but the Republicans made sure, along with Clinton signing off on this back in the day, they made sure that the banking system would eventually collapse by breaking down the wall between investment banks and just regular banks. But you're right. The Republicans have I don't see why anyone continues to vote Republican. If they want a conservative party, vote Democrat. And then let real Democrats get out here, bust our butts, and organize a liberal party. Then people will have a choice. They can have a center-right government run by Democrats, or they can have a center-left government run by liberals. Because we'll never have a left-wing government in this country. That's just off the table. So, I hear you. Republicans scare me more than any a group of so-called terrorists or Al-Qaeda's or Osama bin Laden's or, you know, wherever the hell it is. And weren't you just terrified of Saddam Hussein?
Oh, yeah, he was a real threat, Mike.
Yeah, didn't he just make you just afraid to go to sleep at night, right?
We got 4,000 dead Americans for it.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful from the Republican Party?
It's awful.
You know, and the thing is, Mike, we've got to push back. They want to destroy health care. We've got to fight this right wing. These talk show hosts for the right wing echo machine, they're off the charts. It's time we fight back, Mike. We've got to make people understand, connect the dots. The Republican parties have destroyed this country, and we better take it back. We better stop them.
I hear you loud and clear, Mark. Thanks a lot for checking in, pal. All right, take care. Well, Mark and I are certainly on the same page. Jeff writes in, Mike, I'm sitting in Indianapolis this evening. I've called you from all over the country. I drive a truck, but I'm not a truck driver. And I have way too much time on my hands. I'm listening to you now, as I do most nights. You're good for about 200 miles. Oh, yeah, listening. I got you. I'll bet Kathy won't agree, but I've been pondering about these trials. Is this the way that Obama is going to get the truth out about the Bush crew? In court, the defense has the right to view all the evidence the prosecutors have. They can get the photos of their clients and all the records, present them in court, and call the Bush crew to court to testify whether they authorized the torture. If Cheney says he did not authorize it, then he commits perjury. If he says yes, he did, then he's charged with something. What do you think, Jeff? It's an interesting scenario. I've said before, it's very difficult for me to believe that Barack Obama is just cut from the same cloth as these filthy, murderous sons of bitches of the Republican Bush crime family. I can't do that, you know, and that's a shame, I guess, because what I'm basing that on is the emotion of that is generated in me when I hear Barack Obama give a speech, and I watch him on television when he gives these speeches, whether he's doing it in Berlin or Cairo or somewhere in the United States, and I try to watch his face very closely. I realize, you know, he's got a teleprompter. Hell yeah, nobody could memorize that. And I watch him looking for those little ticks and clues that would indicate somebody saying something they don't really believe in, or someone being insincere, or somebody like Bush lying through his goddamn teeth. And when I watch Obama, I don't see that. Not that I'm an expert on facial tics, although I have been reading some about that recently. I'm sure you have too. how to tell when somebody is lying. It's not all that difficult. Or when someone's being insincere or trying to blow smoke up your butt. And I watch Obama, and I don't get that sense. I get the sense that he truly believes what he says. He's truly trying to do something. And if that's the case, then he truly must have a strategy. And if there's one strategy that he would have, I think it would be exactly what Jeff is suggesting here. Let it come out in court. The best place, of course, would be to let it come out in congressional hearings. But the Democrats in Congress are so goddamn cowardly. They are so afraid of making a peep for fear that what? Limbaugh will beat up on them? Or John Boehner will say something that is just terribly insulting? Or that they won't get elected next go-around? So I think it's very clear that we cannot rely on the legislative branch, the Democrats, to rip this monstrous, hideous thing that the Bush crime family committed or put together, rip it to pieces, let the pieces fall, let people see what they did, let it end. You know, just get it out. Yeah, you know, everybody knows what we did. Who doesn't know that the U.S. is a torture country now? Just like any other country that feels that they do it because they can. And how do you stop it? By revealing it. And by making the filthy sons of bitches who did this, make them pay to the fullest extent of the law. Why are Republicans afraid of that? Why are Democrats afraid of that? Republicans, of course, they will use anything. They will use their dead mothers as a means of knocking the Democratic Party. They're filthy. Republicans are just filthy. The Democrats may be cowardly and incompetent, but the Republicans are filthy and incompetent as well as being being cowards. I mean, my God. Where's the courage? Where is the ability to stand up on their hind legs? I'm talking about the Democrats, to hell the Republicans, to stand up on their hind legs and say, okay, this is what we did. We're going to have hearings. We're going to lay it all out here. And we're going to make sure that this never, ever, ever happens again. You know, I realize that is kind of farcical because that's what the Frank Church tried to do back in, what, 78? The Church Committee hearings? To expose the criminal activities of the Nixon crime family. At least it was exposed. And laws were supposed to have been passed to prevent it from ever happening again. The domestic terrorism committed by the world's premier terrorist organization, the CIA, what they did in this country. Oh, my God. It wasn't supposed to happen again, was it? Well, I don't know what... I honest to God don't know what people are afraid of. What happened to the idea of courage? What happened to the idea of taking responsibility, facing what you did, letting the world know, okay, we have the ability, we're the United States, we have the ability to confront our image, to look ourselves in the mirror and say, okay, this is what we did. And we're ashamed and we are contrite. And we apologize, and we won't do it again. That's leadership. What we have in this country now is slimy, smarmy, two-faced hypocrisy that the rest of the world looks at and says, oh, are you out of your minds? We're going to follow you? We're going to believe in what you have to export? You don't have any products to export anymore. You don't make anything. You don't do any except your weapons. Man. You know, at least I realized things were horrible in this country for so many different groups of citizens back in the late 40s after World War II. But the one thing that we did do, I know we can get into ulterior motives and all this other stuff, but the one thing we did do was take a look at the world that had been blown to pieces. We were the only continent, I think, the only nation, certainly. Well, North America was the only place where there hadn't been... okay, not the only place, but one of the few places where there hadn't been the scars of World War II. So what do? We And it was enlightened self-interest. I'm not denying that. But we had the Marshall Plan. We started trying to show people, look, you know, we can do this. We can rebuild. We can start over again. And I know all kinds of ulterior motives, all kinds of dark things swishing around in the shadows. I understand. But there was a moment there where I think the leaders of this country had the best intentions, of which the road to hell is paved. But, oh, Christ, maybe not. Maybe it was just all mythology. Maybe it just all seemed that we had good intentions. I don't know. But I can't believe that I live in a country now that is so chock-a-block with cowardice. It's amazing. You just gotta try. You just gotta try. Out of rain. Cause if you're not angry, then you're just stupid. You don't care. How else can you react? You know something so unfair.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Coming up after the break at the top of the hour, something I want to share with you is written by Mikhail Gorbachev. You remember him, don't you? Edie is calling from Atlanta. Edie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Well, we're okay. You know, I'm so happy to be back from Dog Patch.
I hear that.
Oh, and my daughter lost one of her two jobs.
Oh, my.
Yesterday, yeah. She had a full-time day job, and in the morning she works for the AJC.
Right.
And that's where she has her health insurance. So they laid off a few people, and she'll get a couple of weeks severance. And I have my little disability.
Right.
But if you don't mind, I'd like to testify for a moment.
Sure.
About how difficult it was for me to get that little pittance.
Go ahead.
Because I've been, you know, when my son was alive, he had, he was special needs, and he had really good coverage, and we had an income from, you know, he was a survivor and disabled.
Mm-hmm.
We had a pretty good income from Social Security, and he had good health care insurance. Well, all that was gone when he died suddenly.
Right.
And I don't know. I finally had to give all the credit to my sister, who just worked her little butt off in Alabama to finally get me Social Security and medical benefits. Because, Mike, I had wasted most of my adult life taking care of my children and my special needs kids.
Right.
You know, so I didn't have enough points to really get the respectable Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to beg for SSI and Medicaid.
Right.
And it is just awful to you know, you keep your nose clean, and you know how this is, and most people listening know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do the best you can, you keep your nose clean, and then you have to crawl
That's
to get
right.
a few pennies just to survive when you can't take care of yourself.
That's right.
And it's disgusting. And I just wanted to get that said, and thank you so much for letting me.
All right. Thanks, Edie. Good to hear from you. So, you know, take care. Take care. Why, you know, I could ask that question of 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, 100 million people in this country. You know, how is it that we live here in this place, and with all of our lies and deceptions and mythologies and promises and PR, and there are very few of us left in this country, and I realize I'm talking in big numbers here, but relatively speaking, very few people left who really have a firm grip on finances, a firm grip on their own lives, their own futures. I can't help, you know, I can't help but wonder about that. And of course, the quick answer is, well, the answer is in the question. You know, it was mythology. So many people in this country were convinced to vote against their own best interests, financial interests, believing that somehow they would become wealthy, when at the same time their voting patterns indicated that they wanted nothing but to remain a slave to corporate America. But somehow the story got so twisted and perverted by the right wing in this country, political right wing, the media right wing, the religious right wing. It got so twisted and so perverted that people were willing to be willfully ignorant and to just time and time and time again go to the polls, or not even go, either by not going or by going and voting the wrong way for them, not for me, you know. Voting the wrong way or not going, and then wondering what the hell, why did the Mack truck hit them? It's just astonishing. And of course, I'm not talking about Edie. I'm talking about everybody in this country who thought that voting Republican or being conservative or making sure the queers couldn't marry or making sure a woman did not have a right to privacy, all that stuff was so much more important than putting people in office who had courage, leadership qualities, who believed in the country, believed in the Constitution, people who refused to engineer or fund or finance wars of opportunity, wars of choice. We just really didn't. We've taken careful aim and not just shot ourselves in the feet, but we've also kneecapped ourselves and pretty much holding a gun to our own heads right now. And that's the part that is very worrisome to me and to a lot of people, is that we're about to pull the trigger, metaphorically speaking, of course. I mean, what's stopping us? I hate it. I really hate it. There's a way out of this. There is a way out of it. It, you know, first requires the absolute destruction of the Republican Party. I mean, it has to go. It has to go. And the removal from the airwaves of people whose interests are counter to the United States. Okay, freedom of speech. Right. Okay, keep it up. Go ahead. Keep it up. But I think most importantly would be, you know, for Americans to educate themselves. Who are we? How do we start out? What have we overcome from those beginnings? We started out with genocide and slavery. What have we overcome? What have we done? Do we have any hopes? Do we have any dreams? Is this the best way to get them? Are we willing to continue with a third of our population uninsured where it concerns health? Are we willing to continue with people going right down the financial toilet because of chicanery and deceptions and lies by this top 0.1% who just gleefully financially rapes and pillages the entire country? Really, when you get down to it, it's our choice, isn't it? And that's what Mikhail Gorbachev has to say. I'm going to share that with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Thank you for sticking around. Back to some phone calls, then we'll go to Mikhail Gorbachev. John is calling from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Hey, John.
Hi, how are you, Mike?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Just fine, except I just read a very disturbing book. It's a new publication called In the Jaws of the Dragon. And, of course, one of my issues is the economy and our loss of jobs. This is by a man named Eamon Fingleton, who was the editor of Forbes and Financial Times, has watched China for many years. The basic thesis is we were supposed to, through trade with China, democratize China. But this book clearly demonstrates that just the opposite has been happening.
Yeah.
They have been Confucianizing the United States.
Yeah, okay.
And it's like Japan, China, Korea are all Confucian-styled states, which is not at all like a democracy, as you know.
Sure.
And they have been maintaining relatively balanced trade with each other while having huge trade imbalances with the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And they laugh among themselves about how they are stripping us of our technology, of our industry, and of all these things. And what's scary is that by 2020, China will pass us in military strength, as they've already passed us in the ability to manufacture things.
Does the book state, and I would imagine it does, that none of this had to have happened except for the absolute unrestricted greed that defines American capitalism?
This defines it very, very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the book goes into that and the
because, you know, it wasn't. This is just what I was talking about a moment ago. It wasn't workers in this country who said, I don't want to work anymore. Let's send my manufacturing plant over to China. But it was the workers who got convinced that they could get a better deal if they voted for these filthy Republicans. And then the Republicans turned around and worked in conjunction with the corporations to move everything out of this country so that there would be more bottom line profit. In the meantime, the American worker, well, we know what happened to him or her, didn't we? Don't we?
That's right. And to show you how powerful it is, even Rupert Murdoch and his organization have kowtowed to the Chinese, and he prints basically don't worry, be happy type stories, fostering the Chinese line and keeping us lulled asleep.
And making sure, Murdoch does, that anyone who works for him, no matter where, but especially on American television, are completely ignorant of their own history, completely ignorant of the relationship between the United States and any other country, much less China. And by putting these people on the air, and you can watch them, you go to Fox News Channel any day and just start at 6 in the morning and watch around till they start playing reruns, and it's astonishing.
My health won't permit that.
But it's just, I won't mine either. But the astonishing, the complete lack of any historical sense or self-awareness or awareness about the country that these people have. It's just,
it's incredible.
In the Jaws of the Dragon, is that the name of it?
In the Jaws of the Dragon. It's a 2008 publication from St. Martin's Press.
St. Martin, that's a good imprint. I'm going to see if I can possibly. We're going to take a week off here in the end of June, and that would probably be a good book to take with me to read. Hey, listen, I'm glad you called.
Thank you.
I'm glad you called, and thank you, John.
Okay, good night.
All right, take care. I've heard of that book somewhere. All right, it's 10 past the hour. Let me do this. This is Mikhail Gorbachev, who has written this for tomorrow's edition. Well, it's already today in the Sydney, Australia, the Sydney Morning Herald. And he writes, years ago, as the Cold War was coming to an end, I said to my fellow leaders around the globe, the world is on the cusp of great events, and in the face of new challenges, all of us will have to change, you as well as we. For the most part, the reaction was polite but skeptical silence. In recent years, I've often told listeners that I feel Americans need their own change, a perestroika, that's political and economic reform, not like the one in my country, but an American perestroika. And the reaction has been markedly different. Halls filled with thousands of people have responded with applause. Some have reacted with understanding. Others have objected, sometimes sarcastically, suggesting that I want the United States to experience upheaval, just like the former Soviet Union. In my country, particularly caustic reactions have come from the opponents of perestroika, people with short memories and a deficit of conscience. Our perestroika signaled the need for change in the Soviet Union, but it was not meant to suggest a capitulation to the U.S. model. Today, the need for a more far-reaching perestroika, one for America and the world, has become clearer than ever. The need for change in the Soviet Union in the mid-1980s was urgent. The country was stifled by a lack of freedom, and the people, particularly the educated class, wanted to break the stranglehold of a system that had been built under Stalin. We opted for free elections, political pluralism, freedom of religion, and an economy with competition and private property. We sought to effect these changes in an evolutionary way and without bloodshed. We made mistakes. Important decisions were made too late, and we were unable to complete our perestroika. Nevertheless, perestroika won because it brought the country to a point from which there could be no return to the past. In the West, the breakup of the Soviet Union was viewed as a total victory that proved the West did not need to change. Western leaders were convinced that they were at the helm of the right system and of a well-functioning, almost perfect economic model. Scholars opined that history had ended. The dogma of free markets, deregulation, and balanced budgets at any cost was force-fed to the rest of the world. But then came the economic crisis of 2008 and 2009. It became clear that the new Western model was an illusion that benefited chiefly the very rich. Statistics show that the poor and the middle class saw little or no benefit from the economic growth of the past decades. The global crisis demonstrates that the leaders of major powers had missed the signals that called for a perestroika. The result is a crisis that is not just financial and economic. It is political, too. The model that emerged during the late 20th century has turned out to be unsustainable. It was based on a drive for super profits and hyper-consumption for a few, on unrestrained exploitation of resources, and on social and environmental irresponsibility. But if all the proposed solutions and actions now come down to a mere rebranding of the old system, we are bound to see another, perhaps even greater, upheaval down the road. The current model does not need adjusting. It needs replacing. I have no ready-made prescriptions, but I am convinced that a new model will emerge, one that will emphasize public needs and public good, such as a cleaner environment, well-functioning infrastructure and public transport, sound education and health systems, and affordable housing. Elements of such a model already exist in some nations. Countries such as Malaysia and Brazil have achieved impressive rates of growth. China and India have pulled hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. By mobilizing state resources, France has built a system of high-speed railways, while Canada provides free health care. Among the new democracies, Slovenia and Slovakia have been able to mitigate the social consequences of market reforms. The time has come to strike the right balance between the government and the market for integrating social and environmental factors and demilitarizing the economy. Washington will have to play a special role in this new perestroika, not just because the United States wields great economic, political, and military power, but because America was the main architect and America's elite the main beneficiary of the current world economic model. That model is now cracking and will, sooner or later, be replaced. That will be a complex and painful process for everyone, including the United States. However different the problems that the Soviet Union confronted during our perestroika and the challenges now facing the United States, the need for new thinking makes these two eras similar. In our times, we faced up to the main task of putting an end to the division of the world, winding down the nuclear arms race, and defusing conflicts. We will cope with the new global challenges as well, but only if everyone understands the need for real cardinal change, the need for a global perestroika.
On what used to be solid ground, when all those dollars they headed south, taking the food right out of the baby's mouth. Down in Mexico, they don't complain as loud. Legend.
yourself with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
I was looking back at faded dreams from yesterday.
21 past the hour. Regarding Lieberman and Lindsey Graham threatening to shut down the government if Congress doesn't pass a law banning forever the publication of these torture photos and whatever videos may remain. Oh, I know, they're saying 3 years. Bat's not. You know better than I. Or, I mean, you know as well as I. Well, you may know better than I, too. But anyway, Scott writes in about Lieberman. Yeah, what's up with these guys, especially Lieberman? Lieberman, a Jew. He wants to cover up torture and murder. You know, there was plenty of torture and murder in the Nazi death camps. What about never again, so that it would never happen again? Would Lieberman want to cover up the torture that happened in the camps? No, of course not. So why is he covering this up? We need to know about it, Scott writes. We need to know who did it. We need to know who were the torturers. Where are they now? Who are the ones who filmed the torture, the sodomy, the murder? These psychotic contractors, who are the ones in the room smoking, laughing, watching impassionately? Are they still in Iraq? Are they among us? Do they live next door? Are these guys sitting in their cellars, licking their lips, wondering what to do next? What's going to happen when you cut one off on the highway, or your daughter turns one down in a bar, or they don't like the way you cut your grass, or the way your dog barks, or what if they like the looks of your 9-year-old son? Scott. Yeah, those are certainly valid questions. I mean, we have laws that say someone convicted of a sex offense, no matter what the sex offense is, it can be a 17-year-old boy and a 16-year-old girl having consensual sex. One of them, probably the boy, is going to be charged with a sex crime. And for the rest of his life, he's going to be identified as a sexual predator. There are certain places he cannot live, which is just damn near everywhere. There are certain things he cannot do. What about the torturers? If we are willing to go to that extent, if we lock people up for selling marijuana, if we stigmatize young people for the rest of their lives for sex offenses that a generation ago would have been considered, oh damn, isn't that funny? They were in the back seat getting it on. What are we going to do about the torturers? Nothing. That's the way it stands right now. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The torturers apparently have been granted amnesty, except for the couple that went to jail because of Abu Ghraib. And I think only one, Sergeant Grainer, is the only one still in jail. Lindy, whatever her name was, got out and had a baby, or had a baby and got out, or something. What are we going to do with the torturers? Look what we do with people who sell, like I said, who sell reefer, or who sell cocaine. Yeah, it's bad stuff. It's really bad for you. It will kill you. Cocaine will. But the torturers have murdered an entire country. Us. Haven't they? They have taken from us whatever moral imperatives we still had, whatever ability we still maintained to set ourselves as the shining city on the hill and all the other bat snot that Reagan was so fond of talking about. They have. And plus, the torturers have guaranteed that the hatred for this country will go on indefinitely, long after you are gone, truth seeker, certainly long after I am gone, probably long after our children and grandchildren are dead. There will still be entire groups of people on this planet who hate us with a passion that will almost demand that they act. That's what the torturers have done. That's what the Bush crime family, that's what John Yoo and the rest of these pigs did to us. Alberto Gonzalez, and who's the freak, who's a federal judge out in California now. That was his payoff. All of these slimy bastards who did this. To what end? What has been the payoff for the United States of America in terms of security? In terms of our, don't laugh, honor, in terms of our moral authority, don't laugh, in terms of our ethical center, don't laugh, I know. So this is what we're stuck with. We will send to prison for 10 years someone who sells little rocks of crack cocaine. We will send to prison for 5 years someone who sells little bags of powdered cocaine. But people who torture? Nothing. Is that the way it's supposed to be?
Catch the...
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
It is about 25 before the hour. A couple of emails and back to your phone calls. This is from Jude in Seattle. Good evening, Mike. What you just spoke about with the two senators and so many others in Congress, excuse me, fearing to bring up the detainees here to the American courts is similar to what Frank Schaeffer wrote in his book, Crazy for God. This is what he wrote. Quote, if secular, democratic, diverse, and pluralistic America survived, then wouldn't that prove that we evangelicals were wrong about God only wanting to bless a so-called Christian America? If, for instance, crime went down dramatically in New York City for any other reason than a reformation or revival, wouldn't that make the prophets of Dune look silly when they said that only Jesus was the answer to all social problems? End quote. Let me digress. So Jude is quoting, of course, is Frank Schaeffer, whose parents were kind of the founders of the so-called religious right movement in this country. Anyway, Jude says it is all overlapping, all of it. They send out the negative, ramp up the unknowing as dangerous, peddle lies like a drunken sailor. No offense to sailors. Like you said last night, no, don't look over there. Here it is. Don't look over there. Too many lies, and they are trying to hide all of them. Yet one of the first lessons the child learns from family is the freedom to know and speak the truth. Who were their individual families? Where are they now? What a vicious web of deceit. Throughout this process of manipulation, the intensity is being pushed up a scale with a focus on mind control. They speak standing on the stage in their churches or in Congress. It's a production for them, a deadly production. Their behavior is shameful and dishonors those who have been killed all over this planet in the name of democracy and peace. Jude. Yeah, it's true. It's so true. There's do you agree, gentle listener, that there's still a struggle going on? You know, I was brought up to believe there was a struggle. There was a fight. It was for the first. There was the religious fight, you know, where the Satan and God were wrestling for your soul. So there was a struggle. There was the political struggle, and that was between those who would build up this country and those who would tear it down. And most of those enemies were considered to be within the United States. There was the global struggle, and that was the hideous wrestling match between the Soviet Union and the United States, Soviet Union and its allies and satellites, the United States and its allies and satellites, the struggle for world domination where it concerned an economic system. So there were a couple of generations of us that were brought up in this country, two or three generations brought up to see everything in terms of this massive global struggle. It was religious, it was economic, it was political. And the struggle was always between good and evil, and the good always resided here. Did you ever notice that? It was not the good that you could find in the political and economic system in, say, Sweden. It was not the good that you could find in, say, the religious system in Japan. You know, pick a country, pick a religion, pick an, it was all here. It was all here. This is where this monumental struggle was going on. And I just wonder if it ever occurred to anyone, it occurred to me way too late, for me to do anything except whine and bitch about it. But if it ever occurred to anyone that all these struggles were nonsense, just complete fabrications, there was no struggle. There was no struggle for anything. And that all this struggling and pushing against these invisible bonds and cords and wires and tubes that we think we've been pushing against for all these years, it's done nothing except take from us our essential energy, our spirituality. It's spiritually raped us. All these struggles that were just nonsensical, completely nonsensical. And you know, again, I go back. I can't get away from Denis Diderot's statement that, you know, man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. So there's two thirds of that equation of struggle, 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 struggle. Why? What the hell? Why not just exist within a system that says, you know, live and let live? There's no struggle. If you want to believe this, believe it. If you don't want to believe that, don't believe it in terms of your spiritual growth. But keep it to your own damn self. I mean, nobody cares about, you know, who you're worshiping. Nobody really does. Unless they're eat up with the same fear that you are. Nobody cares what kind of political system that you subscribe to. Unless it's one that chokes off your own individual freedom and wants to choke off mine. Nobody cares what your economic system is unless it's one that is so rapacious, so ugly, so hateful, so pro the top 0.1% that it casts the rest of us into some form of slavery. But other than that, what's the struggle? You know. I don't know. Sometimes it'd be easier, wouldn't it, just to push your buttons on the Wayback Machine and flee. Jason Leopold is calling. Jason, I've been reading your stuff for years. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate it. I'm actually calling. I was listening to what you were talking about regarding the detainee abuse photographs.
Yeah.
Or the torture photographs, rather.
Yes.
And I thought I may be able to weigh in with some additional information.
Please do.
You know, the photographs that Obama is withholding, I want your listeners to know that they can actually read detailed information about the contents of the photographs, which have been available now for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
On the ACLU's website.
Right.
So the arguments about, you know, withholding these images really don't, it doesn't hold up because one could take the descriptions of these photographs and do an artist rendering from it, if
mm-hmm.
you will.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And, but more than that, actually what's, you know, what's really at stake here is if these photographs were released, what would happen? It would force Obama to take a position. Was this again, you know, the work of low-level U.S. soldiers, or was it the policies of the Bush administration?
Mm-hmm.
And if you recall his statement when the when he decided to withhold the photograph, he said, you know, the people responsible have already been punished. But from what I understand, you know, if the photographs were released, that would lead to calls to, you know, investigate Rumsfeld, investigate
right.
Cheney and others. And, you know, it's pretty clear that they are looking to, you know, block any further attempts of reopening that up. You know,
but wouldn't this give Barack Obama the perfect opportunity to really truly seize, at least on this issue, the moral high ground by allowing this to come out and then letting, I hate the cliches, letting the chips fall where they may, where it concerns a reaction from the courts, a reaction from the legislative branch? Doesn't Obama, as a politician, and not to reduce him to that, but as a leader of this country, doesn't he stand to benefit if the photos?
You know, one would think he does, but right. I think it's pretty clear that he's been, you know, the politics of fear are ruling in this case. And, you know, certainly the beating that he took from Liz Cheney and Dick Cheney, when he decided to release the photographs. You know, again, there's the administration said they would not fight a court ruling. This was a ruling by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals,
right?
Saying you got to release these photographs. And the fact that Obama is now willing to go not only to Congress but possibly to the Supreme Court to fight a Freedom of Information Act request is pretty unprecedented. Not even Bush did that.
Yeah, it's scary and it's astonishing. And if it's based on Obama's fear, then we are in deeper crap than I think most of us want to admit.
Yeah, and certainly that seems to be the case as well with the you know, with documents related to the destruction of torture tapes, which Leon Panetta, you know, to yesterday said that those shouldn't be turned over to the ACLU either. But with regard to the photographs, just to let you know, which I'm sure you already know, but there were 12 investigations that were done after the Abu Ghraib scandal.
Right.
And not one of those investigations ever went up the chain of command. It was only limited to the military police officers, even though people like General Antonio Taguba had wanted to go up that chain of command.
Right, and now
but they were blocked.
Now that he's retired, of course, he is coming out and making it very clear that this was a systemic problem that came from the very top of the civilian chain of command. But he no longer is in a position to do anything about it. He's a civilian like you,
right.
Like me.
And absolutely. And again, you know, if the photographs would came out, it would certainly, you know, beg for such an investigation.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Jason, thank you. Listen, I want you to hold on just for a second because
sure.
I want my producer to get some way to get in touch with you because there have been several times I wanted to have you on as a guest and didn't know how to do it. Thanks for checking in tonight, okay?
Thanks, Mike.
All right, take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Say the F word, did I? Oh, well, the only people here would be the ones listening via the internet. And you can hear the F word. It's just that people over the air can't hear the F word. Oh, my. Thanks to our crew tonight. Ben Birch, our technical advisor. Sharon Gordy, military affairs advisor. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, ethical advisors. Bruce Enberg, our economic advisor. See, when they're all advisors, they don't get paid anything. That's just the way it goes. This is a Malloy program. Are you kidding me? Our executive producer and program engineer is Kathy Bay. She gets paid. Not a lot. Back to your calls here. There we go. Keith is calling from Sacramento. Keith, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. I really love your show. I've been listening to you since the old Air America days.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's what I said. As soon as they left you, I just got rid of them. Signed up as soon as I could for you guys' podcast. I think it's just great.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I was at the impeachment forum that you guys came to back at the Crest Theater a number of years ago. Here.
Oh, my God, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, I do, too. It was really great. Worked with a group of folks before that we got a resolution passed against the Patriot Act by the Sacramento City Council here.
Uh-huh.
And at that meeting, the federal prosecutors for the local district showed up and basically tried to convince the city council that they should listen to him instead of their own citizens.
Yeah.
And not adopt this resolution. Anyway, I was giving you a call just because I was listening to the podcast from last night and heard the story about Judge Hollows and his rather unique interpretation of the Constitution.
Oh, about forcing blood or DNA samples from people who are just suspects.
Yeah, exactly. Not even convicted.
Right.
It just so happens I'm an attorney, and I am involved in various organizations and such. And actually, I'm in an organization with Judge Hollows. I know this guy.
No, for heaven's sake.
Yeah. And it's incredibly disappointing, to say the least, to a ruling like this.
Let me ask you, as long Hollows is a federal magistrate. What does that mean?
Well, a federal magistrate essentially is a district court judge
for
all intents and purposes. What the magistrate does is rules essentially on evidentiary issues before it goes to the actual district court judge. So it is kind of, handling a lot of the case typically beforehand,
before
it actually goes to the full trial.
He's like the gatekeeper about what passes through and what does not.
Right, and so naturally would be the type of judge that would be ruling on things like what kind of evidence can be admitted in a case and that sort of thing.
All right, how strong is his ruling where it concerns the next step up in the judicial system? Will what he decided the other day be tossed out, overturned, ruled silly? What?
ultimately he is in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal. And so one would hope that, cooler heads there would prevail.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the ultimate gatekeepers on all of this, unfortunately, are, a club that's, rather hostile on these sorts of issues if you go wind up in front of the Supreme Court.
Right.
On something like that. So, maybe some chance with the local, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal. But if the federal prosecutors are successful in, escalating it to the Supreme Court and, kind of the more authoritarian perspective they take, mm-hmm. I wouldn't, view it as being too, being a great prospect for staying overturned if the Ninth does the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, I just wanted to say what's most interesting to me is that, being an attorney and learning, coming up and doing this job, I work in the public interest and I represent public citizens. And I defend people against government when it's doing the wrong thing. I primarily work in the environmental arena. And the way that I always learned the system was that we had a legislature that was there to kind of do what the majority wants. And then we have these judges that are supposed to be there that are supposed to protect the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the Constitution is supposed to do for us. The Fourth Amendment, is supposed to protect us from unreasonable searches and seizures
to leave
us secure
mm-hmm.
in our persons and our effects. And, a ruling that somebody who is simply accused
can summarily be subjected
to this kind of treatment.
It's unbelievable.
It really is. It just turns the entire system on its head.
Right.
And kind of says, really what's happening here is, when you think about the structure of this whole thing, He's essentially ruling that Congress has the ability to pass a really horrible law and simply override the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Completely backwards. The Constitution is there to set the guidelines by what the laws are supposed to say, the statutes are supposed to say.
Right.
And at the same time, the judges are supposed to honor the hierarchy of the Constitution as the supreme law of this land.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion that, especially the provisions of the Bill of Rights, are the provisions that are supposed to help protect the security of the individual against the state.
And somehow that has gotten lost, as it always does when a country starts to drift towards totalitarianism. It's frightening stuff. And one last thing, Keith. My daughter-in-law has a degree in environmental sciences from Emory, and she is now in law school. She is probably going to be doing the same thing you're doing.
I hope so. That would be really cool.
Katie said to me, you know, it's one thing to be in environmental science. It's something else to be able to sue the bastards who are screwing everything up. So
it's really fun.
I'm glad you checked in, Keith. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. Have a good night.
All right, sir. You too. We'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Provider and license.